You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the Relationship Engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about, should I stay or should I go in a relationship? What are dimensions that we can gauge the health of our relationship on? And how does that knowledge help us understand whether this is a good or a bad relationship? Here are three ways. Do I feel emotionally safe, respected, and understood in this relationship? That's number one. Number two, are we both growing individually and together towards our personal and shared goals? And then three, when conflict arises, do we resolve it in a way that brings us closer together, or does it push us further apart?
This is a tricky three-step, because typical people, when be in this situation, they don't know. So I stay, I go, does this healthy for me or for our relationship, you know?
That is true. How about if we look at those three dimensions a little bit more deeply? So the top three dimensions on relationship health, this is by looking into the most searched reasons for staying or going, as well as looking into published research in psychology on relationships. Number one, emotional safety, as we said before. Do you feel safe being vulnerable with your partner, expressing your own emotions, and disagreeing without fear of retaliation? And we're looking at a spectrum here. So if you should stay in a relationship, it's probably because you have open communication, you have mutual respect, and you have consistent empathy.
Yeah.
Now, maybe you should go if you have chronic invalidation from your partner, if there's emotional manipulation, if there's a fear of speaking your truth.
And how you measure that.
Yeah, how do you figure that out? And that's all going to be based upon your gut.
Yeah.
Right? How do you feel in your gut? Like instinctually, this just isn't right. Maybe emotionally you're up and down all the time, or maybe you're thinking about it a lot, and when you think about it, you're going, things need to be different.
Yeah.
And we're going to do a lot today about gut, heart, and brain, and those inputs that have impact on your life and in your relationship especially. How about number two? The growth alignment. Are you and your partner evolving together or drifting apart? For instance, you should stay in the relationship or consider staying if you inspire each other's development and feel proud of each other's personal growth. So you're supportive as your partner grows in whatever the chosen direction of their life, whether it's hobbies, where it's work-related, whether it's other activities, right?
Yeah.
One, are those activities things you can support? Maybe they're what they want to do, but they're bad activities for the relationship. They want to have other relationships. Well, I can't support that.
Yeah, but I guess it has to be balanced, because sometimes it's good, for example, for you and me, I work, travel, coming back, and I feel this moment is so nice because I miss you in this time. But we have, for example, this show that we working together and share, so we grew up and have alignment in this way.
So shared goals. Mm-hmm. So that goes back to the growth alignment. Now, you might want to consider going in a relationship if you don't have alignment. For instance, you feel stagnant, unsupported, or in competition with your partner rather than in sync or in collaboration with them. Mm-hmm. So you're I want to do one better than they in whatever it is you're doing. You're that both politicians. Who knows, right?
That is crazy. Yeah, yeah, like no couple like that.
But. Yeah. Yeah. They both seek attention. One may be a politician, the other a radio announcer or something like that. And they are competing for attention in whatever gathering they go to. Yeah. So instead of supporting each other in their endeavors, they're trying to distract or take away attention from each other by focusing on themselves.
Like the Mr. and Mrs. Smith. You know, is that the movies?
Yeah, yeah.
The two spy mission guy, you know?
No one knows about that. Shh. Yeah. And then lastly, the third dimension that we spoke about and brought up at the beginning of the show is, what is your conflict resolution style? How do you handle disagreements in your relationship? Do you repair when you have a disagreement? Now you should consider staying, or maybe you don't even have to consider staying, you just do it. If your disagreements actually lead to new understandings and connection at a deeper level. So we have an argument, misunderstanding about something, we talk through it, understand more deeply about each other's motivations, maybe our family backgrounds, our past relationships, and you learn insights into why you're disagreeing and how to avoid the disagreement in the future by connecting better, sooner on something rather than when it's too late.
Yeah, and also I see couples that they don't know. Mm-hmm. They feel a trap or intoxicated in one relationship. And sometimes I ask, is a both decision stay or both decisions separate? And it's difficult because maybe one be want to stay, the other want to leave, or both want to stay, but it's crazy.
Right.
So that, I guess, the one of the first decision is clarify, do you want to stay?
Individually, clarify if you want to stay, and then figure out. Sometimes, as you said, it's very difficult to approach that subject with your partner.
Yeah.
Because maybe you feel so upset and you don't want to share that because you don't want them to get upset.
Yeah, you don't want to hurt people, and then you don't want to talking about that, but you live in like the water here, you know?
So going to that third dimension of conflict resolution, here are some reasons that maybe you should go in the relationship. If there's recurring blame, you keep getting blamed for something that you're not doing, or they just continuously blame you for problems in the relationship. Stonewalling, where they won't even discuss the issue with you. Or an unresolved fight builds resentment from them to you or from you to them. So when you're not resolving things, your conflict style is don't have conflict, just build more walls. Because walls protect you from each other. Wait, that keeps you separated in a relationship.
But you stay together.
But you stay together because you don't discuss the problem.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I have a friend, they have this kind of the situation. I say, okay, if you feel bad in your relationship, but you don't want to leave or go, so why you not build a new good relationship? And I say, no, I don't want to do that. So it's like the UV is talking in the traffic, and then you see the way that you got on, I want to stay here. So
how do we get ourselves in this situation to begin with? Now we're looking at these three dimensions as reasons to stay or go. But how did we get ourselves in this situation? How do relationships start? So we want to go back in time to a story about attachment theory. Not a story, but a subject called attachment theory. It is biologically, evolutionarily, how humans interact with each other, meet, and bond. And attachment theory, which was developed by John Bowlby and expanded by Mary Ainsworth, it's a compelling framework for how relationships develop. That romantic relationships often begin with three sequential stages. The first one is lust. The second stage is attraction. And the third one is attachment, where you feel a super connection. And we'll go through those stages. We've done it before and in the past, but let's go through them in detail.
Okay.
Is that good?
Good.
That kind of gets us how we get attached. And the reason we get attached without knowing these dimensions of potential reasons of staying or going, because a lot of times how we get involved with the other person is based upon biology and drives and emotions and chemistry, and not actually figuring out if there's compatibility.
Yeah.
Because as animals, we're suited to try to meet up with someone to reproduce, not to get along with them in a social setting, we need to discuss a lot of things about this complex life, but we were set up from biology to be attracted to somebody for other reasons. Mm-hmm. Now we're in this relationship. So lust, the number one, the first stage, is driven primarily by sex hormones, testosterone, estrogen. This biology, it motivates individuals to seek a partner for sexual union and often serves for a catalyst for the initial romantic interest. Lust is not selective and can be directed towards many potential partners, especially at a young age, but even at an older age. It's rooted in the hypothalamus and serves as the evolutionary function of reproduction. So lust just kind of drives animals, people, together to want to mate. So it's an instinctual drive. We really don't have much control over it, and it can be, again, something that moves us towards being interested in multiple people without any real thought about compatibility other than what our biology drives us to. For example, here's some examples. At a friend's party, Emma can't stop glancing at a stranger across the room. She doesn't know his name or anything about him, but there's instant physical chemistry. She finds herself laughing louder, standing taller, hoping to catch his eye, maybe flipping her hair, talking to her friend and giggling, who knows, but she's trying to attract the person. Now, number two, how about Leo? He's on his dating app and he's swiping right on every woman he sees because he's just really sexually driven to meet somebody. He's like shopping for snacks. He's like hungry, right? He's attracted to looks alone and with no expectation beyond trying to have a fun night with somebody on his dating app. That's lust. And then the third example is, during a beach vacation, Carmen finds herself checking out nearly everyone who walks by. She flirts playfully with the bartender, enjoying the rush of attention and desire from strangers. Yeah. That's lust. Okay, so now you've met somebody in this lust stage and you're like, oh, all right, I like them enough that I'm going to go out on a second date with them. Now we start moving into the attraction stage. The attraction phase engages more complex neurotransmitter systems, primarily dopamine, norepinephrine, and serotonin. Dopamine, associated with reward and pleasure spikes during romantic infatuation, creates a sense of exhilaration, obsession, and heightened energy. This stage often includes idealization of the partner and intensified focus, aligning with studies on romantic love and neural activation. Something else that happens in this stage is that the dopamine and other chemical productions in our brain tend to shut off the prefrontal cortex. So we act stupid, meaning we'll do stupid things for love. Some of the stupid things we'll do for love is we'll pretend to be someone we're not to impress the other person.
Yeah. And marry in 1 week.
Marry in 1 week and run away with somebody to Las Vegas and,
exactly.
And do all
that's
these things.
So excited. That's just so attraction.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. But that's the attraction stage is when these chemicals kick in and our prefrontal cortex, the thinking logical part that controls our behavior from a conscious standpoint, is toned down and turned off a bit. For example, after 3 dates, Jason starts to think about Priya constantly. He replays their conversations in his head. texts her good morning without fail, and starts skipping gym just to spend time with her. His friends joke that he's blinded by love, and for now, they're not wrong. What other things happen in the attraction phase? Here's another example. Kim starts dressing differently, listening to new music, and even pretending to like sushi, all to impress her new crush, who she's convinced is the one. Convinced, but again, with the prefrontal cortex shut down a bit, it's more of an emotional thought, not really a conscious thought that has logic behind it. Mm-hmm. So it's thinking without logic. And then third example is Jake spends the whole weekend planning the perfect date with Laura, complete with a playlist of songs that remind him of her and a list of jokes he hopes will make her laugh. So people start doing these things, which, one, they're almost, their brain is overtaken by the thought of the other person. Their behaviors change to impress the other person. And they're doing things out of character in order to build the relationship in this attraction stage. Again, we're talking about why people get into relationships that are not compatible long term.
And I hear some guys say that at this moment, you need to have enough conscious or responsibility, because your old chemical blind you. Mm-hmm. But in the beginning, you have opportunity to run away or stay.
Yes.
But it's difficult. You know, is the moment that you enjoy more, but you need to know, is it the right person for you or not? And it's short time, because you don't really know the person.
Right.
So that is a critical, I don't know what is the formula for that, to have a good decision in this, because the person say when you dating somebody online, for example, so that, you know, the scam people went away, and this is a strategy, because you do more engaged process before you meet, suppose that you never meet your scam person. But I say figure out is a real scam. So it's a person that you maybe can be have a relationship, but you need to wait all this time because you have opportunity to create some kind of relationship. And it's more difficult to break up.
Right. The fantasy. The fantasy relationship is the easiest to build, because there's nothing wrong about it, because you haven't met the person. You haven't had challenges in the relationship with them. So the fantasy in your head continues to build. The point is that where we need our brain the most, it is the most absent at the beginning of a relationship, because biology has conditioned us to get into relationships based upon chemistry and lust, not on is this person compatible with us. In today's complex society, where we need more and more compatibility, because there's so many issues that we can argue about, so many things that we may disagree about, so many different pathways in our lives that need our brain engaged, the way that we go about getting into relationships through chemistry and biology is the exact opposite of what we need to do. So, are we stuck? Are we in an issue now that we can't get out of? Can we extract ourselves? Should we stay or should we go? Will she be able to decipher the mystery of the symbols, messages, and images of her dreams before it is too late? Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about, should I stay or should I go in a relationship? What are the dimensions we should look at to help determine if this relationship is good for long term, or we should consider ending it? Now, at different levels of the relationship, it becomes much and much more complex. So these are things that maybe are best to be considered before we get into a relationship, so we can prepare ourselves ahead of time to analyze certain things that maybe in the past we were blind to. But now that we know more, we may be able to utilize in order to make sure our next relationship is as compatible as possible, or maybe we can learn to make changes in our existing relationship to increase the compatibility long term. Mm-hmm. Should we keep on? with us?
Let's do it.
We talked about the three stages of attraction or attachment theory, where you go from lust, being chemically attracted through the root chemicals of testosterone and estrogen, moving into the attraction stage, where dopamine is dumped into our brain and shutting down our prefrontal cortex that causes us to do behaviors that we wouldn't normally do if we were logically thinking. And now let's talk about the third stage, which is attachment. As we have now spent more time with the person, we've gone through the other stages, we've now gotten close with them, we've learned a little bit more about them. Attachment is for long term. And the third stage, called attachment, is the final stage. It's characterized by deep emotional connection, bonding, and stability. It's driven by oxytocin and vasopressin. These are neuropeptides associated with long-term bonding and trust, not only in humans, but in all sorts of animals. They, not all, but many animals have the same chemical that is part of the attachment. Attachment forms the basis for long-term partnerships and is influenced by one's early childhood and the relationships we had as children. Secure attachments lead to healthier relationships. If you're not worried about the other person cheating on you, if you're not worried about them yelling at you, if you're not worried about things that might go wrong in the relationship, that is a healthy, secure attachment. But where insecure or avoidant attachments can end up an unstable dynamic. So if you grew up in a household where sometimes your parents acted a little crazy, acted a little nuts, sometimes they loved you, sometimes you didn't know. If maybe your siblings were up and down emotionally and you were fighting a lot with them, that you may have unsecure attachment or insecure attachment, and therefore in a relationship you may be unstable in that relationship. Yeah. Right?
Many components.
So, like, for example, let's talk about attachment. 5 years into their relationship, Alex and Jamie enjoy a quiet evening, making dinner and watching their favorite show. They like to be together. They like to be with each other. There's no need for constant validation. They just feel at home with each other. When a crisis hits at work, Jamie is the first person that Alex wants to call. So they're very connected. They're emotionally connected. They're mentally connected. They're physically connected. They're completely connected. Attachment.
Yeah.
How about a second one? Maya keeps a mug with her partner's name on it at work. When she's stressed, a quick text to her partner helps her feel grounded and connected. Her partner brings a consistency and a stability into her life. That's attachment.
This is beautiful.
And third, Sam and Chris have a Sunday morning ritual. They drink coffee, do crossword puzzles, and they go grocery shopping together. Not me.
I do need to do this part.
Third one. I am definitely afraid of grocery shopping. Something that happened to me when I was a little kid. I don't know. It's not a glamorous thing that Sam and Chris do on Sunday morning, but it's their thing. It's what they do. It's their ritual. Rituals are very important,
right?
In a relationship. So these things are the things that get us into these long-term relationships. The point is it possible that during the lust stage of a relationship, we can pull ourselves back and objectively observe what's going on in the relationship to determine, is this a relationship that should go long term? And sometimes we're having so much fun, we're enjoying it so much, the chemicals that are being dumped into our body and into our brain, that feeling of being in love, the addicted to love or love being in love portion. There's so many people who love being in love.
And so I see some couple, like they have, like they, you know, up and down, so like they feel so happy each other, and some moment go down when maybe she or he is meaning and, you know, and unrespectful, and they feel angry because you say that and from my friends and you know that. And then you go back to the top because maybe an intimacy is so excited. So can be healthy. Who knows?
Yeah, we like fighting because then we can make up.
Yeah.
Oh, I like it when she's really upset and she drives off for 2 hours, because when she comes back, she wants to be with me so much because she misses me.
And then become a ritual piece of stuff too. Yeah. You know, so.
So let's talk about the role that the mind plays in relationships. And let's talk about the conscious, the subconscious, and the unconscious mind. Let's talk about the id, the ego, and the superego, not necessarily in that order. Let's talk about conscious thought and brain patterns. First of all, conscious thought in a relationship, what we are thinking about in the relationship daily, tends to program our subconscious mind. Meaning the more we think about certain things in the relationship, we love dinners on Friday night, we love going out with them, we love spending time at home with each other, that these things, when we think about those things and we think about those things positively, there are studies that show that people who think positively about their relationship tend to have better long-term good relationships than those who look at their relationships negatively, for two reasons. One is they could both truthfully be objectively observing their relationships, and one may say, I don't have a good relationship, and the other one could say, I do have a good relationship. But even from a third person outside standpoint, two people that objectively have the same type of relationship, the one who looks at the relationship better than the other will tend to have long-term success in the relationship than the other one who looks at that same observation but looks at it negatively. And here's a couple of reasons. One is the one who looks at that relationship negatively is programming their subconscious to build thought patterns around negativity. They will then associate and see behavioral patterns that fit their subconscious programming. So your conscious programming is what programs your subconscious programming, and then your subconscious takes over. So by positively looking at the benefits of the relationship with your partner, you program yourself to see more and more benefits long term. And then subconsciously, your subconscious mind is actually filtering all the observations of the day based upon positive outlooks rather than negative.
Yeah.
Two things happen. Let's go to your unconscious. Let's go to your id. Let's go to your drives, your sexual drives, your desires, those things like lust. Your subconscious is the first thing that starts to feel the impact of your quote id, of your underlying lust, of those, of that sexual attraction you may have for other people. Your subconscious, if there is a pattern of my partner that I'm with right now is wonderful, I love my relationship, I enjoy this relationship, your subconscious is the first thing that will deal with these animal instincts and say, nah, I'm not interested in anyone else because my current partner is wonderful. And then those thoughts don't even pop into your conscious mind.
Yeah.
However, your conscious mind is the first thing that programs your subconscious. So you need to start with positive thoughts. One, I want to be in a great relationship. Then I get into a great relationship and I observe that this is a great relationship. However, it has to be a good relationship. You can't fool yourself into a good relationship, but you can find a relationship that has the best chances for success. And then talk it up. Be positive about it. Look at the existing part of your relationship and the future part of your relationship as something stable, strong, and growing, and not wanting to ever interrupt that.
Yeah. So we don't want to share that you have to be also extreme positive and not see the reality.
No.
but you need to have the balance in your concept when you figure out it's a healthy relationship. I guess I always in my past I thinking about healthy, so it's something like the, you know, right now people talking about the toxic relationships. So right. A positive can be healthy, and I can handle and live in this kind of relationship. So that's the own question, and we cannot share one same recipe for everybody. Everybody need to figure out what is the healthy for the person and balance and decide to. Maybe I am be focused just in the negative way. Let me see the positive and then take a decision. Stay. Stay or go.
So let's continue to talk about, operant behavior for a little bit. Operant behavior brought about or studied by B.F. Skinner is that we do behaviors, we get results back, rewards or punishment from society, and based upon the rewards or punishment, we continue to do the behavior or we stop. What's very interesting about that is I wanted to look at a link between what is a reward. For us, a reward is dopamine, right? So we've got dopamine, receptors in our brain. And when these dopamine receptors receive dopamine, that's a good thing. Do you know that when dopamine receptors expect dopamine and they get what's expected, everything's normal? When they get more than what's expected, that's really pleasurable. And when they get less than what's expected, there's a depression that sets in. There's a punishment. There's a something's wrong here. That dopamine plays a big role in how we judge situations. So dopamine, and if we know this, and if we know something's giving us pleasure, well, let's try to figure out in our relationship, are we getting pleasure from our partner? How do we increase that? How do we get what's expected? Because if our expectation is wrong, meaning if it's a misguided expectation and we're not getting it, we're not going to feel happy. So part of our feeling rewards in a relationship is actually having the relationship meet or exceed expectations. When we have false expectations and it doesn't meet it, we're going to feel punished in our relationship.
Yeah.
So let's look at subconscious filters and biases. So now the subconscious that has been programmed by how we're thinking about our relationship daily is not accessible that much on a consistent basis, meaning we don't access like, oh, I'm going to think about my subconscious, but subconsciously, all those thoughts are back there happening, and they're either popping up into our conscious thought or they're not. So the more we program our subconscious to a certain way of thinking, and what I mean by programming is everything we think about, everything we work on. If we take math and we learn a new math skill, it's building brain cells. We're getting new neurons. The things we think about in our relationship and work on in our relationship, if we work on a way, a technique of discussing something with each other, that is something we're building in our brain.
Yeah.
If we know we do this with our partner and we get a beneficial result, it becomes a pattern that our subconscious knows is there. So when something arises, a situation arises where it knows it's got a process of handling it with our partner, we can be more calm about a situation that in the past may have upset us because we didn't have that process in our subconscious. Sometimes we think that I am what I am, right? Mm-hmm. When we met, I said, oh, I'm the same that I've always been and I've never changed.
Sure.
and I'll never change. But from that time, we've done a lot.
Yeah.
You know, many, many, many courses in psychology. You know, PhD level courses in psychology, discussions together, writing books, reading stuff, having, 150 plus shows on podcasts,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That every show we learn something new, and as we learn something new,
and we are so different in the beginning.
We are different. We talk about different things. We're old. Well, that works.
Yeah, that's different.
I'd rather be older than not older.
Right? Yeah.
So in any case, the point is that our brains continue to grow and change. And we can choose the direction of how we grow and change. We had a program where we talked about coding, that humans compared to dogs. Dogs have stimulus response. You know, the old Pavlovian ring a bell, dogs immediately salivate. They're not even thinking about what the bell was. They're just remembering that the bell was associated with food. And they're not even remembering that. They just, bell means food, salivate. Yeah. Where humans hear the bell, there may be a little instance like, well, is that the dinner bell? Is that something?
You know, some people for fun, you know, you had a meeting and the notification link.
Yeah.
Everybody looking for the phone. So that's it, the same.
So we can react just like a dog. So absolutely, yeah. You know, hear a ding and we start barking.
Yeah.
However, we can also consciously decide that I'm going to think next time I hear the bell, and I'm going to change my behavior and in the future act differently because I'm more conscious about what's going on.
Yeah.
The thing we can also do, and we talk about coding, is that we can think about how we react, and we can think about how we think about reacting and go, I want to change my ability to think, so I'm going to learn new ways of thinking. I'm going to take a course on cognitive behavioral therapy. I'm going to go to a session with Lizette about discussing hard topics to discuss, coming up with ways of listing something out on the paper and sharing it with each other in a way that's positive and not hurtful. Mm-hmm. You can learn these things, and now these are tools and techniques that can help you get through challenges.
Yeah.
And when you know you have those tools and techniques, it may help you approach challenges that in the past you'd avoid, can build a stronger relationship. So we were talking a little bit about the unconscious drives and rewards. Early on in our lives, when we're younger, we may have these unconscious drives. And it may be, my drive is I want to find a partner. And I go and I start approaching women on campus that I find attractive. And I'm asking them out. And I find that two and three say yes. And I'm like, wow, I'm getting rewarded. This dopamine, these chemicals, my testosterone is high.
And the bell.
And, you know, and I'm like, this is great. And I'm getting rewarded. And so my behavior is, I'm going to ask all these women out. However, one day, one of these women find I'm with one of the other women. And they start yelling at me. They're upset. And now, boom. My reward system is broken because now the rewards I was receiving for multiple dating has been hurt by my reaction of the reaction I received from this one woman. And now my reward is not as positive as it has been in the past. So now I may say, you know what? I'm going to just only date one woman at a time. Not saying this happened, but for some people this happens. And for some people, they're like enjoying the woman getting upset at them. And they're like, that's a reward to them. So they're going to keep doing it. So we do react to our unconscious drives by having behaviors that are either were rewarded or punished, that we get dopamine. We get other chemicals in our body that make us feel good and feel proud and feel happy, or they hurt us. And maybe we get hurt because we have empathy and we see someone else hurt and we go, you know what? I don't want to hurt them.
Yeah.
So there are psychopaths and sociopaths and those who use and abuse other people who don't care how others are impacted by their behavior. But for the most part, most people care and have empathy about others.
Yeah.
So over time we learn, based upon society, societal values, our own values, our own brains, how we react, how others react, how we reinforce our own behavior, what makes sense for us in our environment. Continuing on, how do we reprogram? Through mindful practices, cognitive behavioral therapy, intentional reconditioning, we can change our behaviors. We can think about how we should be acting in certain situations, and we can slowly program our brains to not only think in a certain way, but to actually observe things that we weren't observing before. If I start recognizing all the wonderful things that Lizette does for me, for instance, this week she had to travel in New Jersey and travel to California. She drove back to home, made pasta sauce for me, and then went to the airport and flew to California. I was telling my daughter that Lizette came home to make pasta sauce and then get on an airplane and go. She didn't have to do that, but I recognize that Lizette does these amazing things for me, and I don't expect them, but they happen, and I recognize them.
Thank you for recognizing.
The point is that I could just say, ah, yeah, she should be doing that for me because she's my wife. You know, oh, I'm so good. She does that for me. But the point will be is in programming ourselves is if we are recognizing, observing that behavior.
How you feel when you're eating the sauce? <I'm kidding. laughs>
Oh, is that what happened? Yeah. Observing, recognizing positive aspects of our interaction with our partner helps build our observational skills of more positive interactions with our partner. We program our subconscious to be observant of those positive interactions. Just like we could see a negative interaction, focus on it all week while they're away, and then by the time they come back, our subconscious has built brain cells, neurons, connections that are looking for bad behavior. We're looking for the next thing Lizette does. Ah, she put scented laundry detergent in on my shirts, and I told her I don't like that. Ah, she left my shoes out on the... Well, I did that, but that you start building upon what you're thinking about all the time. Your subconscious starts observing what you're thinking about all the time. So again, those who talk up good aspects of their relationship program their subconscious mind to keep looking for the good aspects of their relationship.
Yeah.
Make absolute sense?
Makes sense.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about a few other things on should I stay or should I go, and how we can make our relationship as positive as possible.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions.
Welcome back to 90 Days Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about stay or go in a relationship, or a relationship that you might get into, ways to kind of understand whether this may be a good or not so good situation to be in. Let's talk about compatibility across a couple of dimensions. Number one, mental compatibility. This involves intellectual curiosity, cognitive space, and shared interests, and what your problem-solving styles are. Mismatched mental compatibility may lead to boredom or constant conflict. And let's look at an example. One partner enjoys philosophical debates, while the other avoids complex discussions. This can lead to frustration and disconnection. How about physical compatibility? Sexual chemistry, affection styles, and physical health can strengthen or undermine intimacy. Not only can physical compatibility undermine intimacy, or should I say, health can do that, but it can also shorten the relationship by one of you not being around so long. It can also limit what you are able to do. The number one thing for couples to do, from my standpoint, from a standpoint of physical, is exercise together. Do something physical that builds muscle, that keeps your muscles strong, that allows you to continue to do things as a couple as you get older. As we look forward to our years in the future together, we see ourselves continuing to travel, walk, visit, do things. And that is possible through physical activity.
Yeah.
Very important in a relationship. Beyond physical and mental, we also talk about emotional compatibility. The ability to empathize, regulate emotions, and support one another defines this dimension. High emotional intelligence often predicts healthier relationships. And that is Goleman from 1995. Not Golnick, but Goleman. Example, a partner with low emotional intelligence may dismiss or mock the other's feelings, leading to invalidation and resentment. And then the last compatibility, we'll talk about is spiritual compatibility. So again, we started with mental, physical, emotional, and let's talk about spiritual. Those are typically the four areas we always speak about. Shared beliefs, values, and existential goals, whether religious or philosophical, create common narrative. If one partner finds deep meaning in meditation and introspection, self-observation, while the other believes such practices are frivolous, tension around life and its purpose may emerge. So having similar spiritual compatibility or similar spiritual beliefs is helpful. So let's talk about relationship trajectory. You're in a relationship. Where are you going? How about this? Are you compatible? As detailed above, emotionally, mentally, physically, and spiritually. Communicate. Is there active listening, clarity, and emotional safety in the relationship? Caring. Do actions match intentions and concern for the other? And then finally, commitment. Is there mutual investment and reliability between each other in the relationship? Once you have that foundation, what's next? Is there growth in the relationship? Is it adequate in the relationship? Do you have a little bit of dependence on each other? The right amount, proper amount? Do you have independence with self-sufficiency without need for each other? Are you independent where you mutually support without the loss of identity? Mm-hmm. Or are you totally dependent and one-sided reliance that may create resentment? So that's the dependent spectrum.
Yeah.
Individual versus couple goals. Do you each have individual goals? Do you have goals together as a couple? Are they balanced and do you support each other? And finally, personal fulfillment. Are you where you want to be? Are you moving in the right direction for yourself and as a couple? Is there anything you want to change? And are you able to work on things together to get where you individually and where you both want to be as a couple? So self-assessment and mutual feedback help identify whether a relationship supports or hinders your personal evolution. Finally, should I stay or should I go? The core decision point requires reflection and clarity. We're going to bring up a couple of subjects very quickly, but we want to just put them in this identification of a criteria that may be considered. Number one, abuse. Abuse, we say go. And it's a very complex thing because it may be emotional, maybe mental, it may be physical, maybe it's spiritual, or at least you feel it is, right? But these are areas that, whether emotional, physical, sexual, financial abuse, it erodes self-worth, safety, long-term psychological health. This should be a reason not to be in a relationship. How about argument? You argue in a relationship.
It has to be balanced because nobody can argue 0% because it's...
Yeah, and that's the point, is that these are spectrums, or criteria. Arguments, are they proactive at the end? Did you come up with a solution that you both benefit? Is it a collaborative win-win situation at the end? Or did you have to compromise a little to maintain the relationship? These are positive. If you're just saying, okay, whatever you want to do, well, that's not good. And it's my way or the highway. That's not good either, right?
Yeah.
How about alternatives? Oh, what does that mean? Other relationships. Oh, that's not good in a relationship. Unless you both want to do that. And we're going to...
That's another show.
That's a different show. We're staying off that subject. Acceptance. Can you accept the other person as they are? That would be one. How about agreement? Do you guys align on core issues? Do you have core beliefs, core issues where you have agreement? And if so, that can help strengthen the relationship. How about acceleration? Are you accelerating in a relationship? You're doing more and more together. You're learning more about each other. And as you do, it allows you to accomplish more and more quickly. And then let's see if we are to our final page, final question again. These were the three questions we started the show with. Do I feel emotionally safe, respected, and understood in this relationship? Are we both growing individually and together towards our personal and shared goals? And finally, when conflict does arise, and it will, do we resolve it in a way that brings us closer rather than farther apart? Things to consider. Thank you for watching 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Have a great week.
Next week.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the Relationship Engineers, Jim Golnick and Lizette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.